front door. There was no one to open it to them. Gamma insisted on living quite alone in the huge old house, with only old Miss Callow to come and clean for her twice a week. And Miss Callow didn't do much of a job, Marianne thought, as they came into the wide entrance hall. Sunlight from the window halfway up the dusty oak staircase made slices of light filled thick with dust motes and shone murkily off the glass cases of stuffed animals that stood on tables round the walls. Marianne hated these. The animals had all been stuffed with savage snarls on their faces. Even through the dust you saw red open mouths, sharp white teeth and glaring glass eyes. She tried not to look at them as she and Joe crossed the hall, over the wall-to-wall spread of grubby coconut matting, and knocked on the door of the front room.
"Oh, come in, do," Gamma said. "I've been waiting half the morning for you."
"No, you haven't," Joe muttered. Marianne hoped this was too quiet for Gamma to hear, true though it was. She and Joe had set off the moment Aunt Joy brought the message down from the post office. Gamma was sitting in her tattered armchair, wearing the layers of black clothing she always wore, with her black cat Nutcase on her bony knees and her stick propped up by the chair. She did not seem to have heard Joe.
"It's holidays now, isn't it?" she said. "How long have you got? 6 weeks?"
"Nearly seven," Marianne admitted.
She looked down into the ruins of Gamma's big, square, handsome face and wondered if she would look like this when she was this old herself. Everyone said that Gamma had once had thick, chestnutty hair like Marianne had, and Gamma's eyes were the same wide brown ones that Marianne saw in the mirror when she stared at herself and worried about her looks. The only square thing about Marianne was her unusually broad forehead. This was always a great relief to Marianne.
"Good," said Gamma. "Well, here's my plans for you both. Can't have the pair of you doing nothing for 7 weeks. Joe first. You're the eldest. We've got you a job, a live-in job. You're going to go and be boot boy to the big man in you-know-where."
Joe stared at her, horrified.
"In Crestomanci Castle, you mean?"
"Be quiet,"
his grandmother said sharply.
"You don't say that name here. Do you want to have them notice us? They're only 10 miles away in Helm St. Mary."
"But,"
said Joe,
"I'd got plans of my own for these holidays."
"Too bad," said Gamma. "Idle plans, stupid plans. You know you're a disappointment to us all, Joseph Pinhoe, so here's your chance to be useful for once. You can go and be our inside eyes and ears in that castle, and send me word back by Jos Callow if they show the slightest signs of knowing us Pinhoes exist, or Farleys or Cleves, for that matter."
"Of course they know we exist," Joe said scornfully.
"They can't think there's no one living in Ulverscourt, or—" Gamma stopped him with a skinny pointing finger.
"Joe Pinhoe, you know what I mean. They don't know and can't know that we're all of us witches. They'd step in and make rules and laws for us as soon as they knew and stop us from working at our craft. For 200 years now, ever since they put a big man in that castle, we've stopped them finding out about us, and I intend for us to go on stopping them. And you are going to help me do that, Joe?"
"No, I'm not," Joe said. "What's wrong with Jos Callow? He's there."
"But he's an outside man," Gamma said. "We want you inside. That's where all the secrets are."
"I'm not—"
Joe began.
"Yes, you are," Gamma snapped. "Jos has you all fixed up and recommended to that harpy Bessemer that they call housekeeper there, and go there you will, until you start school again."
She snatched up her stick and pointed it at Joe's chest.
"I so order it," she said.
Marianne felt the jolt of magic and heard Joe gasp at whatever the stick did to him. He looked from his chest to the end of the stick, dazed and sulky.
"You'd no call to do that," he said.
"It won't kill you," Gamma said. "Now, Marianne, I want you..."